Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Echo Among Warriors, Close Combat in the Jungle of Vietnam, by Richard Camp, narrated by David Colacci. Etched in the bronze of time, you will find the chronicle of your exploits, the names of Dai Do, Lion, DMZ, Upper Ashau, and Khe San will join those of Iwo Jima, Guadalcanal, and Bougainville to echo among warriors. Major General Raymond G. Davis, U.S. Marine Corps, Northern Marine, 1968. Author's Note: Echo Among Warriors is a fictional account of gut-level combat as seen through the eyes of American and North Vietnamese participants. The setting is the dense jungle of the Khe San Plateau, where the author experienced the brutality of war as a Marine Company commander during the North Vietnamese Army's NVA build-up to the 1968 Tet Offensive. His company regularly patrolled the grass-covered ridgelines and jungle-canopied valleys surrounding the Khe San Combat Base, KSCB, the western anchor of a series of strongpoints that stretched across northern South Vietnam. The objective of these installations was to close the infiltration routes, but it resulted in ceding freedom of movement to the NVA while fixing American troops in position. Khe San was a prime example. It was located on a major infiltration route that ran from the Laotian border east to the Ba Long and A Chau valleys and south to the population-rich coastal lowlands of South Vietnam. The hills and valleys surrounding KSCB became a vicious, no-holds-barred slugfest, costing hundreds of lives on either side. In the spring of 1967, there was a series of engagements in what became known as the Hill Fights, which were focused on the four major heights northwest of KSCB: Hill 950, Hill 881 North, Hill 881 South, and Hill 861. By the fall of the year, Marines were reporting an increasing concentration of NVA troops and military equipment around the base. Intelligence reports placed the NVA 325C and 304 divisions, a total of approximately 20,000 men, in the area. Opposing them were three infantry battalions of the 26th Marine Regiment, a battalion of the 9th Marine Regiment, and an Army of the Republic of Vietnam, ARVN, Ranger Battalion, totaling some 6,000 men. By the time of this story, September 1967, KSCB had become a tempting target for destruction. Echo Among Warriors is a story of close combat and a life-and-death struggle between two opposing, equally committed adversaries. It represents just one of perhaps thousands of deadly encounters that reflect the reality of battle, a mind-numbing, intensely personal experience that forever changes the participant. I constructed the narrative so that the listener could experience both sides of the battle. The same battle sequence will roll forward like a movie scene and then be replayed from the opposite viewpoint, through the eyes of the Marines and sequentially through the eyes of the North Vietnamese. The bullet fired from a Marine's M16 at a silhouetted enemy soldier crouched on the jungle path will, in the next chapter, tear into the flesh of that crouched NVA trooper. The story spans a two-day period covering 13 to 14 September 1967. In war, every action has a beginning and an end. There has been no intention to portray gratuitous violence or profanity. War veterans know that words are insufficient to describe the destructive power of weaponry and the resulting horrific wounds, the pain of a lost comrade, and the sudden realization that it could have been him. War causes a visceral, emotional impact on those who fight it. Profanity is like combat humor, both an integral part of the real and fictional combat picture. Veterans will already be familiar with war terminology: arty, 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 shot, corpsman. Nor has there been any intention to depict any similarity between the characters and any veteran of the war. Each character is a composite from the author's sometimes fallible memory. They are rather like a kaleidoscope reflecting a million pieces of colored glass, no one in particular, yet everyone together. Combat is not for the faint of heart, and neither is this book. Personnel Roster. U.S. Marine Corps, USMC. 3rd Battalion, 26th Marines, 3rd Marine Division, reinforced. Lieutenant Colonel Perry Aldean, Battalion Commander. The 42-year-old, newly assigned commander of the 3rd Battalion enters the Marine Corps in 1947 after graduating from the University of Pennsylvania with a degree in business. After attending officer training at the Basic School, Quantico, Virginia, he is assigned as an infantry officer, 0301, to the 1st Marine Division at Camp Pendleton, California. During the Korean War, he serves as an 81mm mortar platoon commander for 6 months, completing the remainder of the 12-month tour as the executive officer of a headquarters company. For the next 16 years, he serves in a variety of administrative and staff assignments, but he is never again in direct command of troops in the field. Aldean is singularly proud of that fact, having learned in Korea that leading young men in combat is hazardous to one's career and health. Despite his lack of command time, he is advanced in rank at the appropriate times and enjoys an excellent reputation as a staff officer, although there is some concern about his lack of infantry experience. The assignment to the 3rd Battalion is an attempt to correct that oversight. Major Ron Kaufman, Operations Officer. Kaufman, a fresh-caught field-grade officer, has been kicked upstairs from command of a rifle company in the same battalion. The 35-year-old officer is a savvy tactician, known for his ability to decipher enemy intentions and devise tactical schemes of maneuver to thwart their ambitions. An inspirational leader, he stands in sharp contrast to Lieutenant Colonel Aldean, who employs threats and rank to cower subordinates. Kaufman takes great pride in never having served anywhere but in an infantry unit, and, if the truth were known, looks down on staff weenies. He is having a tough time adjusting to the new battalion commander and looks for any opportunity to get to the field. Lima Company, 3rd Battalion. Captain Andy Anderson, Company Commander. A former enlisted Marine, Anderson is on his second tour in country, this time as the commander of an understrength rifle company, one of four in the battalion. A tough, well-respected field commander, he is more comfortable shooting the bull with his men than in polite chit-chat with the rear echelon pogues at the officers' club. He doesn't have many close friends, except Major Kaufman, because they share the same views. In the summer of 1967, he leads his company in a series of fierce battles along the DMZ, learning how to fight the North Vietnamese. In the process, he develops a healthy respect for his enemies, finding them to be tough SOBs. He has also learned that if you don't have your shit together, the NVA will have your ass, as more than one poor bastard found out. In the long-abandoned agricultural area south of the Benhai River is where Anderson operated. It was a deadly game of blind man's bluff, as opponents blundered into one another, often at point-blank range in the dense undergrowth. Under Anderson's aggressive leadership, Lima excels in this barroom, no-holds-barred, reach-out-and-touch-someone brawl. In this finishing school of hard knocks, Captain Andy Anderson, U.S. Marine Corps, has become one tough son of a bitch himself. Gunnery Sergeant Mike Smith, Company Gunnery Sergeant. More than one played-out Marine has remarked in awe, "The gunny loves this shit," as he watches this tireless, indefatigable middle-aged man soldier on, putting the youngsters to shame. The man is right. Gunnery Sergeant Mike Smith has achieved his lifetime ambition, leading Marines in combat, and he is enjoying the hell out of it. After quitting high school to fight in Korea, he arrives just after the truce is signed and spends the next few months sweeping up after the parade, bitterly disappointed that he doesn't get any trigger time. Despite the letdown, he stays in, excelling in the post-war downsized corps. With 3 tours in the Fleet Marine Force and 2 as a drill instructor, Smith is a lean, mean, well-trained fighting machine, a great compliment to his hard-charging company commander. Second Lieutenant John Littleton, 1st Platoon Commander. A summer graduate of the basic school, where all Marine officers are trained, Little John Littleton turns down an opportunity to leave to ship out immediately, reasoning that if he arrives before his classmates, he will have a better chance for assignment to a rifle platoon. He later discovers, much to his chagrin, that there is such a severe shortage of lieutenants because of casualties that he would have been assigned an infantry platoon in any case. 2 days after arriving in country, a helicopter drops him off on a hilltop position where he is immediately assigned to the 1st Platoon, 3 weeks to the day after completing training. A cold dose of reality jolts his confidence as he faces the prospect of leading men in combat. This is no training exercise, no blanks, no pretend casualties. It is real life in living color with real bad guys, combat-hardened North Vietnamese regulars. For the first time, he is confronted with doubt, wondering, will I be able to hack it when the shit hits the fan? 1st Lieutenant Dick Frazier, 2nd Platoon Commander. Called Tiny by his close friend, Gary Larson, Frazier is anything but. He's 6'3" and a svelte 215 muscular pounds, down 20 after 2 months in the field. An outstanding athlete at Alabama, Frazier starts for the Quantico Marines football team while in training, but balks at playing after graduation because he wants to get in the war. He gets his wish, assignment to the 3rd Marine Division, Republic of Vietnam. After a whirlwind 10-day leave, during which he cuts a wide swath through the hometown honeys, he boards a chartered TWA-727 at Travis Air Force Base, California, for the mind-numbing 18-hour flight to Okinawa and a brief layover. 24 exhausting hours later, he reports to the 3rd Marine Amphibious Force Transient Facility, where he is processed in-country and eventually assigned to Lima's 2nd Platoon. 25 grunts look to him for adult leadership, which he provides, much to their relief. Following a couple of minor skirmishes and numerous combat patrols, he considers himself to be a seasoned veteran, although he has yet to come up against a determined force of NVA regulars. 1st Lieutenant Gary Larson, 3rd Platoon Commander. Like his 2nd Platoon nemesis, Gary Larson joins the casualty-depleted company as a replacement when the previous commander is wounded and evacuated. After 2 grueling months in the field, he is now a physically hardened, competent infantry officer, a far cry from the wet-behind-the-ears Butterbar who didn't know his ass from second base when he first reported. Larson's calm demeanor and fireplug stature contrasts sharply with Frazier's pizzazz and height, but the two are close friends, despite the wrangling over whose platoon is better. If the truth be known, the two share a common trait, an aura of understated self-confidence that inspires men to rally in desperate circumstances. Larson's ability to lead men against overwhelming odds, while struggling with his own mortality, will be sorely tested in the days to come. 1st Lieutenant Tom Napolini, Artillery Force Forward Observer. Recently attached to the company as an Artillery Forward Observer, FO, Napolini's job is to bring the wrath of God down on the head of the enemy, often the difference between life and death for a sorely pressed infantry unit. Fresh out of the artillery school at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, Napolini is still wet behind the ears and untested. Born and raised in the Bronx, he is a fast-talking, wise-cracking, irreverent, 5'2" ball of energy that often lets his alligator mouth overwhelm his hummingbird ass. A case in point, just after meeting the company commander, Napolini describes his role as lending dignity to the otherwise vulgar infantry brawl. Anderson is not amused. Napolini is everyone's idea of a city slicker, a real-life Damon Runyon caricature, complete with a New York accent. Well-liked by the enlisted men, he has yet to prove himself to Captain Anderson, who considers the untested artilleryman something of a feather merchant. Much talk, little action, but will give the little cannon cocker the benefit of the doubt, at least for a while. Staff Sergeant Royal Brown, Platoon Sergeant, 1st Platoon. Still a staff sergeant after 22 years in the Corps, Brown is at his terminal rank. While most of his contemporaries have been commissioned temporary officers or received accelerated promotion, he languishes in grade. Only the Corps' need for men, because of its rapid wartime expansion, keeps him from being tossed out on his ear. Early in his career, Brown is discovered to be a brutal tyrant who leads through intimidation and fear. He is court-martialed and thrown off the drill field for physically abusing recruits, but he somehow manages to avoid being discharged. Packed off to a series of backwater assignments, he disappears off the skyline until the demand for infantry staff sergeants forces his recall. Ordered to Vietnam and assigned to the 1st Platoon, he has picked up where he left off. Corporal Eric Petrovich, Machine Gun Squad Leader. Petrovich volunteers for the Corps to escape the numbing boredom of a small mining town in western Pennsylvania, the first of his extended family to make the break. A hard rock miner at 14, his massive physique is a tribute for swinging a 20-pound sledgehammer 10 hours a day. Singled out for his size and quiet leadership style, he is given a machine gun squad as a private first class over more senior men. A month later, he is meritoriously promoted to corporal and awarded a Silver Star for bravery in action during an attack on his platoon's night defensive position, in which he single-handedly beat the intruders back with an entrenching tool and a pistol after his machine gun jammed, killing at least 4 NVA in hand-to-hand combat. A quiet and unassuming leader, his size motivates his men. No one wants to piss him off. Hospital Corpsman Larry Zimmer, 1st Platoon Corpsman. A mild-mannered, caring man, Doc Zimmer appears to be somewhat out of place in the company of macho, foul-mouthed leathernecks. The appearance is misleading. He is fiercely loyal to them, taking great pride in belonging to this irreverent bunch of armed teenagers. Actually, he considers himself to be more Marine than sailor. He has been heard on more than one occasion to refer to his service brethren as swabbies, a derisive nickname used by his platoon mates. The men of the platoon treat him with respect, knowing that Zimmer is the genuine article. He has proven himself time and time again, risking his life to treat the wounded. Trained to perform limited emergency first aid, he has been faced with horrific injuries that would challenge the abilities of a trained surgeon, and he has saved lives. His normal location is with the company command group, but with the loss of the 1st Platoon's corpsman, he volunteers to accompany them on a patrol, forgetting the old adage, never volunteer. Bravo Company, 3rd Reconnaissance Battalion. 1st Lieutenant Herb Wilson, Reconnaissance Platoon Commander. After completing 6 months as an infantry platoon commander and facing transfer to a boring staff assignment, Wilson volunteers for a vacancy in the 3rd Reconnaissance Battalion. The screening board takes one look at his exemplary combat record and immediately accepts him, much to the disappointment of his old commander. He quickly proves to be an adept reconnaissance officer by combining well-developed infantry field skills with a savvy tactical sense. His men claim he is part Vietnamese because of his ability to ferret out the NVA in their jungle base camps. However, at 3 inches over 6 feet, with blonde hair and blue eyes, his bloodlines are clearly Nordic. He is considered to be one of the best patrol leaders in the battalion, his stingray teams achieving impressive results, killing dozens of NVA regulars and disrupting the flow of supplies into the Khe Sanh area. Unknown to Wilson, the enemy has brought in an elite counter-reconnaissance platoon to kill his Marines. Marine Observation Squadron 2, VMO-2. Captain Jim Harper, Aerial Observer. Prior to being commissioned, Pop Harper has been a gunnery sergeant, and at 38 is the oldest man in the outfit, and the most experienced, with 20 years' service. One of the first staff non-commissioned officers to receive a temporary commission, he is immediately sent to Aerial Observer School, where he learns the fine art of controlling air and artillery support from the back seat of a flimsy puddle jumper, a single-engine World War II Cessna. He enjoys his new flight status and the perks of his commission, the least of which is that he no longer has to salute 20-year-old second lieutenants. The flying is fun, and he discovers a knack for the new occupation. Of course, the extra flight pay doesn't hurt either. All good things come to an end, and upon graduation he receives orders to the Republic of Vietnam, where he earns a chest full of decorations for numerous acts of bravery. Now on his second tour, and an old salt, he is the subject of a great deal of good-natured kidding from his much younger pilot, who dubs him Pop and compares him to Methuselah. Despite the light-hearted banter, however, there is an underlying seriousness, for both men know the NVA hate them and would like nothing more than to shoot them out of the sky. First Lieutenant Dan Reed, Squadron Pilot. Ever since he can remember, Bomber Reed has always wanted to fly jets, even going so far as to take private flying lessons with a local crop duster in a vintage Piper Cub, and racking up enough hours to qualify for a license. Immediately after graduation from a small college in the Midwest, he takes the Marine Corps aviation test, is found qualified, and is shipped off to Pensacola for training. He breezes through the syllabus despite the whirlwind courtship of a local girl, whom he marries in the base chapel before heading off to advanced flight training. A new wife, combined with the rigors of the school, take its toll, and he graduates near the middle of the class, effectively eliminating him from jet training. Instead, a sharp-eyed assignment officer spots his small aircraft qualification and puts a round peg in a round hole. Before Reed can say, "Aw, shit," he is headed for Vietnam and duty with VMO-2 as the pilot of a Bird Dog, a light airplane somewhat faster than a Piper Cub, but 500 knots slower than his dream plane. Not one to piss and moan for long. Nobody would listen anyway. His squadron mates were in the same boat. Reed teams up with Pop Harper and tears the NVA a new asshole. Screw 'em if they can't take a joke. Marine Fighter Squadron 223, VMA 223. First Lieutenant Gary Arnold, Squadron Pilot. On his very first mission in support of troops under fire, Arnold's A-4 is hit by several rounds of 12.7-millimeter machine gun fire, forcing him to make an emergency landing, which he walks away from. A month later, he is faced with a similar situation. Only now he's at the wrong place at the wrong time. People's Army of Vietnam, PAVN. 1st Battalion, 803rd Regiment, 324th Division. Lieutenant Colonel Pham Le Duc, Battalion Commander. As a young teenager, he joins the Viet Minh and sees combat fighting the Japanese during the waning months of World War II. Singled out for bravery, he is selected to be a member of the Liberation Army Honor Guard that protects Ho Chi Minh during his 1945 Independence Declaration. 9 years later, he earns the coveted Hero of the Liberation Army Award for leading the remnants of his platoon into Outpost Beatrice at Dien Bien Phu. Severely wounded, he spends months in a hospital before being released to watch the defeated French army march out of Hanoi. He is a natural leader who views his duty as an obligation to his fellow soldiers. Revered by his troops, they refer to him as Elder Brother, a sign of deepest respect. Nevertheless, the political cadre mistrusts him for his habit of speaking his mind, but is hesitant to do anything because of his war record. Major Vu Van Minh, political officer. Assigned by the cadre to maintain the spirit of the troops, this gutless political hack schemes to wrest control from his battle-tested commander. The son of a senior official, Min avoids the usual selection process, which is based on talent, virtue, and bravery on the battlefield, and is appointed because of political connections. A coward, he is desperate to keep his moral failure from being discovered, even if it means eliminating the commander and taking control. Lieutenant Tran Van Doi, reconnaissance platoon commander. This veteran officer is censored by the cadre for failure to display proper fighting spirit during an abortive attack that decimates his platoon. Forced to undergo a Kiem Thao, self-criticism and critique, he is eventually restored to command but remains unrepentant, blaming his superiors for disregarding his sacrifice. Well respected by his men, he desires nothing more than to lead them well and protect them from needless sacrifice. With orders to eliminate his American counterpart, Doi must not fail, or he will be replaced. Senior Sergeant Nguyen Ba Than, Sapper Platoon Commander. 2 decades of war have made this senior non-commissioned officer into a ruthless killing machine. Commander of an elite sapper platoon, his well-honed survival skills and battlefield acumen make him an extremely dangerous foe. A survivor of numerous skirmishes, he is completely at home in the deadly close combat of the jungle environment. 1. 1st Platoon, Lima Company, Combat Patrol, 0630, 12 September 1967, 7 clicks northwest, KSCB. The impenetrable triple canopy jungle formed a green screen, blocking the sun's warmth and tramping the early morning coolness between the steep banks of the concealed stream. The soothing murmur of the shallow water flowing over its bed of mud and pebbles added an air of tranquility to the jungle stillness, a silence so complete that even the drone of an insect disturbed the serenity. Dense undergrowth and stands of bamboo thickets hugged the steep banks, restricting movement to the stream bed. Wild boar and deer prints abounded in the soft mud, marking the stream as a pathway for the jungle's larger inhabitants. The imprints recorded their passage, providing visual proof of their existence long after they had passed through. Near the branch of a long-dead tree, a half-concealed imprint, unlike the others, had attracted the attention of a heavily armed party of men who crouched in the shadows. Barely visible, they scanned the foliage looking for the telltale signs of recent activity. Contrasting shades of green vegetation formed patterns of camouflage that played havoc with their surveillance in the soft light. One man emerged from the shadows in a hunter's crouch, rifle at the ready. He squatted near the downed tree limb, stared intently at the stream bed. Just behind and to his right, another man shifted into position to cover him with his rifle, an unconscious but carefully choreographed move. Rising slowly, the scout cautiously moved back into cover and made a series of gestures with his hands, which were relayed along the dispersed column. His movements telegraphed a signal of danger while silently requesting the leader of the patrol to come forward. Second Lieutenant John Littleton and his radio operator, Lance Corporal Ken Sanders, stepped out of the shadows and moved forward along the column of men. Neither was distinguishable from the other 25 Marines of the platoon, except that Littleton's uniform...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?